Aaron Schultz and Shelley Pittman for their help in getting us the show that I did in 2010. I'm Esti Dinor. We'll be talking again next week. Bye bye. Reported, disregard the mainstream media, distorted.
We come and listen and support it. You're listening to WORT Madison. Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So Floyd was actually off assignment last week. He filled in for you because you were busy at a conference.
Yes.
That you were putting on.
Yeah.
And how'd that go?
Well, thank you for asking. Yeah, it went really well. It was a conference sponsored by something called the Wisconsin Institute for Peace and Conflict Studies. And so the topic was peace building and future conflict around environmental change. And there were 75 people there from around the state. It was mostly faculty from different colleges and universities and university branches and students. And then community members and activists and so on. It was really good. It went really well. Cool. And, of course, you know, I organized it. I was the chief organizer. But the people that were the, like, session chairs and our catering, everybody was just so good. Everything pulled together. It's one of those things where you feel like you're riding the wave of chaos.
Sure.
And if you just, I mean, it's kind of like you make your own luck, right? I mean, I was working like a maniac to make sure everything was going to go. But all these other people were doing so much work. And, of course, the presenters and the conference itself was just really wonderful. We had a luncheon and we had a keynote panel discussion, and it was the focus was Pope Francis Laudato Si, which is statement about stewardship of the environment, and trying to see if we can get people of faith as well as just generally to see that this is a big problem, you know. And so we had a Jesuit there and a Buddhist and a professor of Muslim studies from Marquette, and we had someone who was more kind of like sort of like a New Age approach to religion, and I was telling my provost there, and he said, "Oh, no Catholics," which is a joke about Jesuits, of course, but anyway, but it was an excellent discussion, and that was kind of the center of it, just seeing how important these issues are, not just materially but spiritually and so on. So, but there were lots of really great discussions about immigration and about how we use resources and the disproportionate way in which the so-called advanced West is dooming other parts of the country, other parts of the world. I mean, one country right now, for example, that has really met the goals for carbon neutrality is Rwanda, of all things. And, you know, this Rwanda is trying very hard to keep that up. Costa Rica is another country. So many of the nations that are, you would think, would be most suffering and feel like, oh, screw you, I'm going to do whatever I want, are actually trying to help out in this. And we need obviously to get on board with that as well.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
So it was great. It was very good and very fun and very inspiring to see so many very wise and involved people all together at their one place.
I always thought that the left is kind of has sort of a missed opportunity, or I don't know what you'd call it, but that there are people on the right who should be aligned with things like conservation and you know, I mean, you think of the typical hunters and outdoors people.
Right.
They all vote Republican. Not all, but I mean, you know, overwhelmingly vote Republican.
Yeah.
You know, religious people, a lot of the evangelicals, of course,
right.
You know, overwhelmingly vote Republican. And you know, I mean, the hunters and fishers, they don't want, you know, strip mines to come and take away the places that they enjoy. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, the Buddhist is going to have an easier time understanding this concept, and so is the woman who, I guess, represented a more of a, I don't mean to any disrespect with this, but more of a New Age approach to religiosity, spiritual approach. They're going to have an easier time of the Abrahamic religions, you know, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, a harder time because, you know, it says in the text, at least as it often translated, that, you know, God gave human beings dominion over the earth.
Yeah.
But I got to say, you know, God lends you a lawnmower. You better, you know, give it back in pretty much the same shape. You know, like, Al, I gave you the lawnmower. You did what to it? You know, I mean, that's kind of the underlying premise of the Pope's comments about the environment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're right. You would think that that would be a bridge that you could use to people who have a very, you know, secular standpoint on one side, but a very religious standpoint on the other, is there's something sacred about the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And again, many indigenous religions, as of course many, I'm sure almost all of our listeners know, have a similar kind of attitude. It's unfortunate that we have to educate, I think, people again in the Abrahamic traditions that this is perhaps the right way to think about it.
Yeah. So a lot of that is the PR and the just the calling people tree huggers and things like that.
Yeah, I know. Well, Companion had a friend. It was so funny when we got our first Prius back in the day. And Companion had a friend who was from Texas who said, well, I can't buy a Prius because I'm a conservative. You know, and it's kind of like, okay, what is like liberal about saving on gas mileage? You know, like what? I mean, that would have been in the old fashioned way of thinking about conservative, like, you know, penny pinching and trying to like, you know, not get too ahead of yourself. That would have been considered, you're saving. You know, that's what conserve means, right? You're conserving fuel. You're conserving money. But no.
Yeah.
But that's because, I mean, I think it's like Christianity today in the United States. You know, right-wing Christianity, to me, I swear to goodness, it seems like some kind of bizarre death cult or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I've literally talked to people from evangelical backgrounds, and I've kind of like, their attitude is, you know, don't tread on me. I'm going to smack you. And it's like, you know, it actually says something about what happens when someone smacks you in the Bible, you know, like turn the other cheek. Did you read that part? You know what I mean? Like,
I skimmed over that.
Yeah, it's like
I went right to the last chapter. That's the good one.
Yeah, not to make this the prayer hour or anything, but I mean, it's a difficult, toxic problem in the United States today because, I mean, when the Trump caliphate begins, we're going to have to start sorting out who's on what side of that.
Yeah. So
I mean, that's the way it feels sometimes.
Going way back to, you know, when Reagan appointed James Watt as the Secretary of Interior.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of these end times people, and he didn't see any reason at all to conserve anything because, you know, we were in the final generation.
Yeah. Where's the humility? Where's the self-control? You know, the idea that if I want it, I get it. Is that what? I don't think there's a religion on the earth that says that. I mean, I really don't.
Prosperity gospel.
Yeah, there's like, that's what I mean. Is that some kind of weird, like, rub the, you know, magic bottle and the genie will pop out? I mean, it's like, I mean, Christianity in particular is like a religion of sacrifice. I mean, right? I mean, God didn't say, okay, Jesus, that was enough. You know, it just didn't work out that way. You know what I mean? I put you through enough. Come on down from that cross. No, that is not how it worked. And you can have your views about whether that's right or wrong or good or bad, or that's fine. Nietzsche had a view on that one. But I mean, how you can twist it to, if I ask God for a fishing pole, he'll give me one. I don't quite get it.
Well, you have to make the donation first.
Yeah, well, there's that.
You got a little seed money for the Lord.
Yeah. The con man always gets in the way. Which, by the way, if I may quickly just say that that was my headline of the week. Trump's abortion waffle leaves backers on right questioning his... And now this was the laughable part. True views. Like, what? You don't get that yet? It doesn't have any true views.
Lucy's going to pull the football away.
Yet again. So how did things go? I was sad that I wasn't able to be part of that.
Yeah, real quickly before we get too far afield here. We did our annual Wisconsin Film Festival show last week. We were down at the Bartell Theater. First of all, thanks to Ruby for producing the show. Did a wonderful job.
She's amazing.
She really is. Yep. And then Elmer was our on-site engineer. And there's another guy. I didn't catch his name. I think it was Mike or something.
We should make it up.
Let's make it up. Yeah, well, yeah.
Claggett.
And so
Claggett was there.
So they did a nice job setting up. And the people at the Bartell were very, very sweet to us. And they were happy to have us there, you know, which is not always the case when we go somewhere.
No. about 5 minutes and that's it. You know, they're like, happy to have you. And then we open our mouths. You know?
And then Super Dave was the engineer back at the station. Very good. So they were wonderful and good guests. It was a lot of fun.
Floyd, did you insult anybody?
Not really. We walked right up to the edge with one guy, but then we backed away from
very
that
good,
thing.
Very good.
But no, they were all really nice people and really smart and fun and good films that we saw. And,
yeah.
I don't know.
And
some people came down. Some listeners came down to say hi.
This is like with my conference. Don't you just love it when you get together with a bunch of smart, interesting, dedicated people who say weird crap and are funny? And so, I mean, it's just like makes life worth living. You know?
So that was great. So thanks to everybody.
Just want to mention another little housekeeping. I just finished the most recent batch of the Mindless Minion cards. So I gave those to Karen here at the station, and she will she'll be sending those out to everybody. So I think there was about 20 this time. Those are all Mindless Minion cards. Of course, when you pledge to WRT during the pledge drives, you get to ask for a gift. And in return, and some people, many people, more than I would have guessed, ask for Mindless Minion cards so they can have a Mindless Minion number, which, by the way, you need to use to identify yourself in any transactions you might have with Melco.com. It was very, very nice. A number of people that actually did ask for Minion cards, and those are out in the mail right now. A physical card will be coming to you soon.
Oh, and some listeners gave us, I forgot to bring this in for you, but CDs of, are you familiar with Joe Frank? I think they did a film on them 1 year. I think we covered something.
Yes.
He did radio performance pieces or whatever you call them. They're kind of hard to categorize, but some listeners came down and gave us CDs with the compilations of like 70 of those.
So wow.
It's been nice. I've been listening to them in the car in the week. So anyway, thanks for those too.
Yeah.
So,
but anything to keep back the horror. The horror.
So here's the meeting announcement for the week of April 15th. Oh, just for Monday, for the Monday, for the 15th.
Okay.
It's for the Republican Committee on Rules will meet.
All right.
On Monday.
Don't tell me what to do.
In the Capitol at 3:00. And here's what they're going to look at.
Okay.
The Hands Off Our Home Appliances Act. The Liberty, that's the hoo-ha, I think is how you say that.
The hoo-ha act. Well, I wish they would keep their hands off of people's hoo-has. That would be an excellent idea.
So they've got that. Then the Liberty in Laundry Act.
What does that even mean?
This is real. This is not a parody.
Oh, my Lord.
And then the Clothes Dryers Reliability Act.
Oh, my gosh.
The Refrigerator Freedom Act.
So they thought these up while they were sitting on their collective front porch yelling at the kids to get off the lawn. So
the Affordable Air Conditioning Act.
I wonder what that means. Oh, that probably means so you can get crappy, environmentally harming air conditioners.
Regulation. And Stop Unaffordable Dishwasher Standards Act.
Wow.
That spells SUDS Act, actually.
Yeah,
so that's kind of a nice one.
That's a nice one.
But the hoo-ha is my favorite. That reminds me, I don't go on Twitter very often or X or whatever because it's gotten pretty bad. But I once in a while I'll look on there, and there are a couple people still that I like to check in on.
Yeah.
And but I noticed the other day when I went on there that, they had the trendings. And Stormy Daniels was trending, and I thought well, maybe there's some news, big news, which is silly because there's no news on Twitter anymore. But old habits die hard. So I clicked on that, and I thought, well, maybe what's going on with that? I thought maybe there's some big developments in the trial or something.
Yeah.
And it was such garbage. It was like Well, it was the day Trump released this letter from her from 2018 saying that they never had an affair. It was something she did under duress when she was
still
under
part of the deal, I'm sure.
Part of the NDA and stuff. Yeah. So, but he released, I mean, it's been out there for years.
Yeah, of course.
But he released this bombshell that, you know. So a lot of people were retweeting that or re-Xing that or whatever you do. Yeah. But then there were like about half of them were, and I'm sure these are bots, but they were talking about how they were claiming that Stormy Daniels is actually a man.
Well, Trump would know.
I think we got pretty good evidence to the contrary. But I mean, and it was like a thing, you know. I mean, it wasn't like just one crazy person. It was like something that people were saying.
The letter was just part of the plan. I mean, if I was paying off a porn star, I'd say write a letter so that later I can use that as evidence in court. I mean, that's his. Obviously, Trump didn't think of that, but his lawyers thought of it,
which is.
Yeah, you know, Michael Cohen thought of it,
and she's disavowed that letter.
Of course, ages ago.
A long time ago. Yeah. So, you know, it was part of the NDA.
Here's the big revelation.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. Just this idea that there's this group think that okay, we'll just say Stormy Daniels is a man, and that's So you're saying that what?
It's a pretty spectacular disguise.
It fooled Trump, apparently.
This just shows you how much attention Trump pays to his sexual partners. You're what?
It's like the right has this weird obsession with Michelle Obama too. They keep there are all these rumors that Biden's going to step down and Michelle Obama's going to show up at the convention and get the nomination and
maybe.
I suppose.
All they're doing when they do that kind of stuff is they're basically imagining their worst fear.
It's scary.
And claiming it's true.
Scary black woman, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Claiming it's true. I had a family member that used to do that, poor thing. She was an older woman who would be a little confused sometimes. And stuff that would really worry her, she would say had happened.
Mm.
This is down in Kentucky. And it would be, you'd say, no, that didn't really happen. She's, well, I thought it might or something. But she'd say it like it was real. And I think it was just she wanted people to be scared enough of it to not do that thing.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
So I mean, a crazy example was my nephew was staying with her, and he came out of the bathroom just wearing his underwear, you know, because it's, you know, they're just their family.
Sure.
And he was going back to his bedroom or something after, you know, using the bathroom or something. And she didn't like that, so she said that they were going to take her children away if he did that again.
Mm.
And I said, well, how do you know that? You know, I said, well, they are. I know they are. And I'm like, did someone say anything to you or anything? I mean, did you find this out anywhere? But there was a big fear. And so it was real. It became real in her mind. So I don't know. It's some people's thinking is not what you would expect.
School board members in the Sheboygan County District listed Christian values and conservative politics as desired characteristics in a posting for a superintendent position at a public school.
All right.
The original post for the Cedar Grove, Belgium school district job was amended after potential candidates raised questions.
Mm.
The retired superintendent became aware of the posting on Tuesday when a friend applying for the job brought it to her attention. She immediately took some action, and they cleaned that up. She said that it was a mistake, that that was a comment made during focus groups, and that doesn't make me feel a lot better.
You wonder why they're having a hard time finding teachers in Wisconsin.
And it was made during focus groups, and you're correct, that should not have been in the report. It'll be removed. So. Mm. Yeah, speaking of teachers in Wisconsin, there's a story, I don't know if I can dig it up here, but we're losing teachers like crazy.
Yeah, there was, I was on the front page of the State Journal today. They said that, let's see if I can find the stats here. A report was released on Thursday by the Department of Public Instruction, found that nearly 40% of new teachers leave their career or the state. I mean, there's just there's a stench here I just have to get away from after just 6 years. And only about 2/3 of aspiring educators who completed some form of preparation program and met licensure requirements were ultimately employed. So a lot of people are going through these emergency licensing programs and stuff that got set up after the Republicans destroyed our public school system. And so, but they're not even like, they're only about two-thirds of them even go through and do it here in the state. And not surprisingly, according to Underly, Jill Underly is the state superintendent of public instruction. She said Wisconsin's kids are suffering from losing quality teachers. And of course, that requires we spend some money, but we don't want to do that. Yeah. 40% of new teachers leave their career or the state after just 6 years.
There was another story. I didn't bring this one in, so I'm doing this from memory, so the numbers might not be quite right, but that a study found that Wisconsin teachers' salaries in real dollars had gone down like 15%.
So
do you have that in front of you?
Yeah, I do have that right here. Let's see. It's more than that, Mel. It's about 20%, they said. If you combine that, you're probably just thinking of salaries, benefits also, like what the compensation package is. But they said that teachers earning, this is from the same report, earning more than $100,000 back in 2010 are effectively earning today about $81,500 in total compensation. We're not talking about take-home pay. We're talking about the other benefits and so on. So, in other nations, I mean, I hate to say it again, you go to Finland, your school teacher is paid like a professional. They're given responsibility to decide what the students are going to teach. There's no kind of religious, sexual, political, line they have to sign their names to or anything like that. And they're a well-respected professional cadre, and they have some of the highest results in terms of student achievement in the world. You'd think you'd want to model stuff on that, but we like to use
after successes.
We always like to use half of our ass here in the United States. So.
That reminds me, there was a story this week that Trump had a big fundraiser last week, supposedly with billionaires and stuff. But some of his comments leaked out, of course, and one of them was he was wondering why people don't emigrate here from the nice countries like Denmark and Finland and Sweden and Norway.
Those people are afraid to come here.
Well, I like the word nice as a stand-in for pale.
Yeah, totally racist, of course. But that's just, that's beating a dead horse there.
I know. I get it.
The thing is, you can say everything. There's so much egregious about Trump, but there he is.
Yeah.
That's it.
And again, sort of a related note, Trump and House Speaker Mike Johnson plan to push for a bill to ban non-citizens from voting. The interesting thing is that it's already illegal.
Yeah, of course.
It's all performance art,
Well, it's worse than performance art, if I can just say that. I mean, It implies it's all contextual.
Oh, right.
It implies that they're doing it now. Yeah. The fact that they're bringing it up makes it sound like it's exigent. So this is a problem that needs fixed. So again, the people that aren't paying attention say, oh my God, I can't believe they were doing that. That just shows you how crazy the world is.
Yeah, and he's going to fix all this stuff.
Yeah.
And
it's like, no, that's not even happening.
Right.
But
we can't even get people to vote. I mean, we get like maybe on a good election, half the people show up to
the
vote.
I think the last three elections, just because Trump so motivates people, have been relative, considering the history of the last like 60 years or so, have been relatively big. But I mean, still, and this election is going to be crazy.
Well, Putin got 99% of the eligible voters.
I mean, this time is going to be so balanced on the edge of a knife. In terms of that, I mean, it's going to make a difference whether you and I vote, it's going to be like, because it's going to be that there's going to be all these third party and fourth party people out there.
And they're going to challenge every vote.
And they're going to challenge every vote.
Especially if your skin is a little too dark,
It's just a tan.
The Republican-led Tennessee legislature has overwhelmingly voted to send the Republican governor a proposal that would ban marriage between first cousins. The State House cast a 75-2 vote on Thursday on the bill. So
they finally got around to that. I think we did that story.
We talked about them kicking it around.
Yeah, a couple months ago. They're moving forward like a juggernaut.
It was an 1820s Tennessee law that restricted some marriages among relatives, but did not prevent first cousins from marrying.
Well, and if we were in Arizona, that would be the law of the land, as they say.
required to marry your first cousin?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're so attractive.
My cousins were gross. I'm glad I didn't have to marry any of them.
I'm trying to think about what... I don't think I ever thought about any of my cousins being within the realm of that. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
I mean, no incest sensors in my brain.
And you grew up in Kentucky.
And I was in Kentucky, right. Yeah. But I mean, I never thought any of my cousins were attractive. I just thought they're your cousins. Like, what? Whatever. Oh. Of course, I had some pretty ugly cousins too.
Yeah, exactly.
Had to tie a pork chop around the neck to get a dog to play with him.
So, here's some sad news: the Golden Bachelor. Now, you probably aren't aware of this, but the show, The Bachelor, but they decided to have like an old guy this time. They found a nice looking guy. He's about 70.
Sure,
or so
70 can be nice.
And
yeah.
Interviewed a bunch of older women and then love struck. He found the winner, gave her a rose or whatever they do, and they got married.
A withered rose. Just the thorns. Enough of this. Let's cut straight to the
Big
chase.
Box of sand. Exactly. So they got married.
Okay, excellent. Oh, so the Golden Bachelor and married the Golden Now, was he truly a bachelor? Because I got to tell you, if a guy's 70, he's never been married, I'm a little worried about that guy.
He had been married.
I
think he was a widower.
Okay.
So,
all right. That's all right then.
Yeah. So anyway, so they got married like 3 months ago.
Okay, excellent.
And, sanctity of marriage and all. They're getting divorced.
Yeah. I have a very strong
sanctity of marriage.
I have a very strong feeling that meeting on a celebrity like top show is not really a meet cute. Really is not. It's more like a cattle call than anything else. I mean, I can't imagine that would be like really get to know the person really well.
Yeah.
So I think old people should just live together anyway. I mean, that just makes more sense.
Yeah.
Then they can each draw Social Security and
get your accountant involved.
Yeah,
but it makes sense here.
Yeah.
So speaking of reality shows, we had a request to talk about O.J. Simpson.
Oh, O.J.
And he died this week.
Yeah.
That kind of sort of tripped off a lot of things in this country, like that kind of the trial of the century that we would have every 6 months or so. and it spawned the Kardashians. I mean,
yes.
they were involved in the league, not these people, not this generation, but the previous generation was involved in the legal defense.
Right.
And so fame is fame. So it got there. But all I want to say about OJ and then you can kind of translate this into 2024, but he died owing the Goldman family $100 million.
And a lot of people don't know that. I often use this example. I haven't used it in a while because things have moved on, but maybe now that it's publicity, there's a lot of publicity around it again, I can use it again. But I often use this example for students of mine to talk about the differences in expectations when it comes to knowledge. Because what you set as your standard will tell you whether you know something or not. And the thing is, OJ won, in a sense, the criminal trial, because the standard of proof was so high. I mean, they could potentially execute you or put you in prison for life or whatever. So you better be pretty gosh darn certain. And his lawyers were able to introduce enough information to undermine the idea that it was known beyond a reasonable doubt that this happened. And that may have been an appropriate response, actually, given the evidence and the standard. But in the civil trial, the only evidence is it's more probable than not. That's the standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're weighing it because all you're doing is taking somebody's resources. And so the standard of evidence is much more like what we have in ordinary life.
Yeah. But
he was guilty as a result of that.
Liable.
Liable, yeah. But I mean, you're basically saying, okay, which one's true? It depends on your standard.
I don't know. Writing that book, If I Did It.
Yeah, like, that was
that kind of tipped the scale for me.
I don't know if you remember, but we were around. Longtime listeners will know that we were doing this show during that period of time. Would have been 96, maybe somewhere around there. Mm. And we had declared, well, I think it was you had declared this an OJ free zone because it was everyone was talking about it all the time. But then every now and then, we would have to let a little bit of OJ in.
Yeah.
And so I checked on this, and the Federal Office of OJ Information Management said that you could have trace amounts of OJ and stuff, just like rat droppings in your
right,
ketchup, right?
Exactly.
Trace amounts of OJ still counted as OJ free, so that was good.
Yeah. So. Well, my point is that he died with millions of dollars in assets.
Yep.
And
living in Florida.
And living in Florida.
Which is where they all go.
Yeah. And so it just shows how difficult it is. I mean, you hear these judgments.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they got, you know, $85 million.
Right.
Jean Carroll got $85 million.
Yeah.
Well, no, she didn't.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She got a judgment for $85 million.
She got vindication in a court of law. That's
right.
What she got.
Yeah. And that's good. That's good. But
that's
good.
Yeah.
But $85 million is good, too. But, you know, you have to work like hell to collect that money. I mean, the court doesn't go out and do a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, they say, okay, you've got that judgment, and then you have to work at it.
Yeah.
And
they need like the three guys to go out and get the money or
yeah.
something. Okay, boss. Nothing pays off like hired goons, I feel.
Well, a lot of OJ's income was exempt from that too. He had a lot of like pensions from the NFL,
sure.
and probably stuff from the Screen Actors Guild and Social Security and stuff like that. So, but they couldn't touch any of that. So,
in a strange way, last week this is a very indirect connection, but it was amusing. I watched Airport 1975.
Oh my goodness!
The actual movie.
Was
and,
OJ in it?
No, oh. OJ was in Airplane, and that's what made me think of it because. What's weird is Companion and I were watching that, and you don't know how closely the movie Airplane, the parody movie from 1980, tracks on every single thing that is in this Airport 1975 movie, including the nun, the guitar, you know, all these different things. And it was like OJ is actually filling a space in that second movie that was being filled by a contemporary basketball player who was not named, actually. They just were talking to him in the back of the plane at one point, who had a cameo.
I don't think OJ was in Airplane. He was in Naked Gun.
Oh, was he? I thought he was in Airplane.
I don't think so.
Was he? Oh, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. So.
Okay. I was thinking about that.
It was also based on a movie called Zero Hour.
Which was a much older movie.
Much older movie. Yeah, the Airplane was. So.
Yeah. But we were watching the Airport 75, and there's a scene where they have the guitar, and we kept waiting for Sister whatever her name to smack somebody in the head with it. You know?
Well, OJ was in a movie called Capricorn 1, I think it was, where they faked the moon landing.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a new movie.
Oh, it was a documentary, right?
There's a new movie coming out with Scarlett Johansson, and it's going to be about faking the moon landing.
Oh.
Fly Me to the Moon. It's coming to you soon in theaters near you or something.
Right.
But so...
Yeah,
just the circle of life, I guess.
So that was almost 30 years ago. That's amazing.
OJ, yeah.
Yep. So. Long time ago.
All right, we have to take a brief break, and then we're going to come back with...
A bunch of stuff.
Okay, I have calls coming to ophthalmologist offices this week for some reason.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
I feel lucky. I feel lucky. Yeah.
Wartstock is coming to Warner Park on Sunday, May 19th, and we're holding a raffle with some great prizes. Winners will take home one of five Summer Music Festival weekend passes, and we've added dinner for six with tequila tastings at Migrants worth over $700, a pair of season passes to Forward Theater, stays from Marquette and Ruby Marie Hotels, and a crystal and onyx necklace from Goodman's Jewelers. Gift certificates from Sardine, Orange Tree Imports, Ten Pin Alleys, and much, much more. Plus, merch from Wine and Hop Shop, and of course, some great wart swag. Tickets are $3 each, two for $5, and five for $10. Drawing is at 5 p.m. at Workstock, but you do not need to be present to win. Tickets are available at upcoming ward events or at the station. A complete list of prizes is on our website at warkfm.org. Good luck.
I feel lucky today.
And we're back. So did you watch the eclipse or did I?
Yes, there was a bunch of us that all got together and Companion had some NASA approved eclipse glasses, not like those ones you get from Amazon.
Right.
And, so, yeah, it was pretty fun. I mean, my aunt Hilda, who lives in Central Ohio, she and her male friend, he has a farm just north of there. And it was actually in the zone of totality and it was very nice.
They
went up there. She just turned 80.
So did you get on there?
No, I wasn't able to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she turned 80 on Tuesday, so it was the day before her 80th birthday, and she and her friend went, and they sat and watched it, and she was very excited. It's the only one she's ever seen, and being 80, it's probably the last one she'll see.
Yeah.
So she was very excited by it.
Oh, very cool.
Told me all about it, and that was great. So
the next day, you know, one of the top search items on Google was?
I can't imagine.
My eyes hurt.
Oh, no. Yes. Is it the Amazon glasses thing?
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's this story about an ophthalmologist in New Jersey that I assume is just the tip of the iceberg, but he said he's received an influx of patient visits and phone calls from people complaining about eye pain after viewing the eclipse.
Oh, wow. So. Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, there was an eclipse.
I remember a picture of a guy last eclipse looking up at the sun without any glasses at all.
Yeah, but orangutans have very different ways of processing light.
He was throwing feces at it.
Yeah, I know. I remember when I was a kid, my mother was so freaked out there was an eclipse when I was a child. It must have been a partial one. And my mother was like, "You kids don't look at the sun." It was like, "We never look at the sun." Like, what kind of idiot is that? But she was convinced. She got us so scared. My sister and I was afraid we went out. We go out in the yard. It would like somehow the sun would blind us just because we didn't know what an eclipse was.
We grew up on cartoons and comic books. I mean, you know, So there was always death rays coming from the sky. Those things.
I was talking to someone, and this is one of those weird conversations you have with random people sometimes. And this person was saying, it's really coincidental that the sun and the moon are the same size in the sky. And I was like, wait around for 60 million years and they won't be. Because the moon keeps getting further away from the Earth.
Yeah.
And they're not sure exactly.
It's shrinking too, isn't it?
They're not sure exactly how fast it's receding. Right now it's moving about an inch and a half a year away from the Earth. But eventually it's going to be too small relative to the sun to actually block it when to have total eclipses. Yeah.
It was weird to see some of the people, you know, talking about how this was God's anger. And I mean, it's like, what year is it?
Yeah,
I know. You know. That Marjorie Taylor Greene was talking about the earthquakes and the eclipse and
gay marriage.
And it's like the gays are
obvious.
Gays are getting on too much.
Obvious.
But I love this idea that, God's angry, so he throws the eclipse at us. It's like, no, we knew this was coming like 200 years ago. Yeah.
I'll tell you, I'm much more worried about things like the ocean heat shattering records. The ocean has now broken temperature records every day for more than a year. So far, 2024 has continued 2023's trend of beating previous records by wide margins. In fact, the whole planet has been hot for months, according to many different sets of data. According to Gavin Schmidt, he's a climatologist and the director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, there's no ambiguity about the data. Last month, the average global sea surface temperature reached a new monthly high of 21.07 degrees Celsius, or for those of us in North America, 69.93 degrees Fahrenheit. March 2024 continues the sequence of climate records toppling for both air temperature and ocean surface temperatures. Of course, it's Samantha Burgess, who's the deputy director of Copernicus Climate Change Service, which is a research institution funded by the European Union. But also, I'm going to mention that March, our lovely March, is the 10th consecutive month that there's been a new heat record for global heat. So we're talking now not about the ocean, but about the air. March 2024 averaged 57.9 degrees Fahrenheit, exceeding the previous record from 2016 by a tenth of a degree. And this is data from the same group, the Copernicus Group. It was 3 degrees warmer than in the late 1800s. That's the baseline used for temperatures. And you can guess, Mel, why that was the baseline. It's before the burning of fossil fuels began growing rapidly. Since June of last year, the globe has broken heat records every month, with marine heat waves across large areas of the globe's oceans contributing, as wow. I just mentioned.
I read a story this week about attempts to get people to understand the severity of what's going on, and it's very frustrating because the studies showed that you'll present people this evidence, these facts, yep. and their response is based on what they already thought.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they didn't believe in it, they find a way to discredit it or discount it. And
but that's like the guy I was just mentioning with the size of the sun and the moon. It's like, okay, you don't realize that these processes have been going on for millions of years, and that we were living in a relatively
a little
stable
slice
time, there, yeah. just a little slice. That's not the way things always are, or need to be, or should be, or will be, no matter what we do.
Yeah,
it's all it's a complex and crazily changing system.
Right, right. We used to have one continent.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly. And when we had one continent, the moon actually was pretty close to the Earth. It's what's happened is now that it's broken apart, there's more tidal action, which means the Earth is slowing down. And if you remember how gravitation works, it means the moon is going to pull away more because the Earth is slowing down.
Yeah.
But I mean,
I think it's embarrassment mostly that's making it pull away from us.
So it should be expanding its speed because there's a lot more to be embarrassed about. World War II, the tipping point, I think. But that's just me.
Here's a bunch of people posting online about food. They're nutritionists and things like that. And there's a big thing right now is using an anti-diet language to avoid food shame, saying that there's no bad food. Captain Crunch isn't bad for you. Turns out a lot of these are paid for by General Mills and Cargill.
Yeah. See, the problem is there isn't bad food. There's food and non-food. And I would put Captain Crunch in the non-food category. I can go part way with him there. Got a bunch of stories about the other great thing that we've created for ourselves, the other system of horror, which, of course, is the whole cyber structure that we've created. Summer Olympics in Paris, of course, is going to be going on here. And the people in Paris, the French authorities, are bracing themselves for a giant cyber attack. They assume that they're going to be a target. And the president of the Republic, President Emmanuel Macron, said that he wouldn't name anybody by name, but he had no doubt that Russia was going to be trying to mess up the Paris Olympics, of course, because France has been helping out Ukraine. Russian athletes will be participating in Paris, but they will not be able to participate under the flag of their country. They're just like a bunch of guys or gals. Russia is banned because, and I think we can't emphasize this enough, it's against international law to illegally annex another country.
Wow. Who knew?
Here at home, I don't know if you heard about this, there's a new set of class action suits being filed in Dane County against poor Group Health. Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin back in January had a cyber attack that compromised important personal data for 533,809 people, and included in the stolen data were Social Security numbers. So we've created an amazing way of storing information, which is absolutely accessible to everyone. So great idea. Maryland, and another related story just this weekend, passed two sweeping privacy bills that aim to restrict how powerful tech platforms can harvest and use personal data of consumers and especially of young people. And as you might imagine, it faced strong objections from Amazon, Google, Meta, and all the rest. The new rules require approval of by the governor of Maryland, Governor Wes Moore. And he hasn't said how he's going to go on this, but they're very worried about harvesting data. You know, I was explaining this to somebody. I said, well, if you let somebody in to your house, that's not trespass, right? If you're letting them in, then you've given them permission. It's not wrong, and they're not violating your privacy. I said, yeah, what, imagine you let somebody into your house and then they took pictures of everything in your house and sold the pictures to other people. How'd you feel about that?
Or they went to your desk and got all of your account information.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just you're letting them in.
Hey, what is your mother's maiden name, by the way? Yeah, I'm just curious.
Letting them in to rummage around. Mm-hmm. Here's a thing that was especially chilling, and you'll know why in just a moment. It's talking about right now, as we're trying to learn up these AI-powered chatbots, what they need, they've already plundered everything that you can possibly imagine. What they need now are humans, smart humans, to tutor chatbots. And there's people all across this great nation of ours.
I've been doing that.
Have you really?
A little bit, yeah.
Stop it. Stop it right now.
I just type in kill all humans. And yeah. We seem to.
You and Bender.
We hit it off right away.
Yeah. People get paid as much as $20 to $40 an hour, basically to help. Train these chatbots in the nuances of human communication and so on. Self-driving cars benefit from this. A lot of different AI applications. One of the things I learned this week, and I really need to double check it because I saw it in an article and it seemed improbable to me, but maybe not, is the impact that AI has on our environment. Apparently, the amount of electricity that's generated in order to create one usable algorithm for AI is equal to this total amount of pollution created by a car,
really?
In the United States in its lifetime.
I had no idea.
So because you're using so much electricity for this infrastructure. And of course, we don't think about that because it's all clickety click. You know, I mean,
it's magic.
Just, yeah. It's just like not knowing that your blouse is being made by slaves in Senegal or something. I mean, we're end users and we have no idea what's going into the process. But apparently, in order to generate create these algorithms, which uses a lot of machine power. They need to generate tons of electricity.
So we need a drill, baby, drill. I think.
that's answer A. Yeah.
This is just a headline because I couldn't read the article. This stuff grosses me out, but it's a scientists accidentally made a mouse grow legs in place of genitals.
Sorry.
What'd you do at work today, honey?
Your spouse comes home with this hollow, haunted look in his or her eyes. Well, all right. Was it the mouse thing again?
Yes.
Yes. What are they doing now? Don't ask.
Oh, we've seen this story before, but there's some new evidence that some economists are a little confused on how the economy is prospering so much here, because it's doing pretty well. I mean, and you know, they keep talking about inflation and things like that, but when they trace it all back, it turns out that what's really driving our economy is immigration.
Yeah.
Immigrants are, yeah. They're coming here and working.
Yeah, yeah. There's productivity. Which I thought we were for. It's the wrong kind. It's not nice productivity. That's the problem.
Nice. Yeah. Exactly.
Ay.
We need people like that. We need people who want to work hard, yeah. Who are younger. I mean, we're an old-ass country now.
Yeah, yeah.
And
we're doing better, actually. I mean, this is the thing. We're doing better than a lot of our you know, Northern Hemisphere buddies on this this score, and it's all because of immigration.
Yeah,
people, for whatever, despite how hateful people can be in this country, other people from around the world want to come here, so let them do it. You know,
they just want to work and build a better life for themselves, right, and their family. Yeah. I mean,
that's crazy.
What's wrong with that?
Hey, speaking of the economy, I got to tell you, I don't know if you saw this. There was a record set for Action Comics number one this week.
Did
see that?
Yeah.
It's the comic book that introduced the character of Superman to the world back in 1938. And like a lot of things from the late 30s, you know, it hasn't worn that well. Now every other movie you watch is a superhero movie, right? I was talking to somebody about this. You should read a lot of the mid to late 40s cultural criticism. A lot of those Marxist cultural critics really down on superheroes because they just saw it as the lead
Uberman,
in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the lead in. I mean, literally, it's named after, you know, something from Nietzsche, right? And the whole idea is it's you know, vigilante violence will solve all of our problems. Yeah. But anyway,
man will protect us.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, so. And but anyway, from a distant planet.
With golden hair.
Yeah, $6 million this comic went for.
Yeah.
It was an anonymous
buyer. So
it's
a $6 million man.
Yeah, exactly. So. It makes it the most expensive comic to ever sell at auction. This is according to Heritage Auctions, which sold this rare copy just this week.
Yeah, tax the rich.
Indeed. I think that's a good indicator that needs to happen. Speaking of comics, here's a somewhat nicer story. This is a not nice because she passed away, but it's a nice retrospective. There was a woman artist, which was very unusual back in the day in comic books, by the name of Trina Robbins, and she passed away just this last week at the age of 85. And Trina was not only a cartoonist, but she was also an early feminist, and she made an amazing series of underground comics starting in 1970. Called It Ain't Me, Babe. And I got to tell you, I'll just describe this to the viewers. On the cover of the first issue, there's a very angry Olive Oil, a very angry Wonder Woman, Mary Marvel, Little Lulu, Sheena, the Jungle Queen, and a really, really hacked off looking Elsie the Cow. Now, that's a team I'm not going to stand up against. She actually was in it's interesting, she was actually mentioned in a Joni Mitchell song, Ladies of the Canyon, back in 1970. Trina wears her wampum beads and fills her drawing book with line, sewing lace on widow's weeds and filigree on leaf and vine. After Underground Comics kind of went the way of many things from that era, she decided to kind of get into mainstream comics, and she started drawing issues of Wonder Woman. She did a full run of Wonder Woman after 4 decades of male artists on the starting back in the course of the 1940s on the comic. And she went back to artistic tropes from the 40s, from the Golden Age, but it was a very notable run that she had. She also designed the costume, and this may sound kind of anti-feminist in a way, but she designed the costume for Vampirella. And the female vampire,
such as it is.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. She started this comic back in '69, but as of course it fell into the hands of the male promoters, the costume got skimpier and skimpier. And she told Fanbase Press back in 2015. She said, "The costume I originally designed for Vampy, as she called her, was sexy but not obscene. I will not sign a contemporary Vampirella comic. I explained that is not the costume I designed."
Good
so
for her.
Free and easy, but she doesn't need to bikini wax. So.
When the first Captain Marvel movie came out, I mean, she wore essentially a flight suit. I mean, she wasn't like an astronaut,
right? Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was telling her that I saw some guys commenting online how they didn't like that, and they said, I wish they would have used the original costume. And she said, "What was that, underwear?" And I go, "Well, yeah." Fort Collins Public Library copy of Ivanhoe was thought to be long gone until an unnamed woman returned the book over 100 years past its return date. I'm a slow reader too. So I get that.
That story spoke to you. Huh?
Ivanhoe was checked out and due back in the Fort Collins Public Library and Free Reading Room on February 13th, 1919. The library book checked out. That was until an unnamed woman dropped the book off earlier this year. They said the woman's brother had found it among her mother's belongings in Kansas. And it survived and then was in fairly good shape there. So pages were yellow, but the original due date slip was still attached inside the book. I like that.
Yeah. Just didn't get around to it. A little bit of a procrastinator.
Before it had gone missing, it had only been checked out three times.
Nice.
And then it had the rules on the inside of the book too. It says a fine of 2 cents per day shall be collected on all books. If a messenger be sent for a detained book, an additional charge of 25 cents shall be collected. I like the language there.
Yeah, well, we used to use subjunctive. If it be, that's the subjunctive. We don't say that anymore.
So at 2 cents a day, the fine would have been $760.
Yeah.
Adjusting for inflation, that'd be about $14,000 today. But the library stopped charging.
No, I blame for that, Biden.
I returned this library book and the fine was $14,000.
Biden.
when they were all complaining about inflation. There was some right-wing politician took a picture at the gas pump, and he complained that it cost $100 to fill up his truck. And then, but he showed the pump.
Yeah.
And you could see it was like about 40 gallons. You got a big ass truck. Yeah. It takes $100 to fill it up. Big deal.
I don't usually quote from the TV comedians, but I was amused speaking about President Biden that I think it was Kimmel. Said something about the ruling of the Arizona Supreme Court. Said he brought back this 1864, law. And President Biden said, I was against it back then. I'm against it now. That was pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Hey, let's see. I got a study here that says that hugs are good for you. It's according to a research that was published in the journal Nature Human Behavior. And I think that this is information is skewed because here's where they did the study. They looked at 13,000 adults, children, and infants, but it was in Germany and the Netherlands. I think the problem there is those people are so unused to being touched that it made a gigantic difference to their lives.
What is this?
Was
is los?
Yes, was is los, exactly. One study showed, and now if you still believe it, again, the sample set, I'm a little worried about. But
let's go hug some Germans.
Let's go and see how that works out. I remember the first time I hugged my grandmother. It was like hugging an ironing board. She got this look on her face like, what? So after that, you know what I did? I shook her hand. She liked that better.
At least you didn't salute her.
Yeah. I shook her hand. She was okay with that. Okay. Then I got to the place where I did the double hand.
That's
double
okay.
Hands on a,
that's
on
okay.
A hand.
Yeah.
That's kind of like you're caressing it a little bit. Yeah. That was as far as it went. There was no whole body contact. That was not going to happen.
That's third base for a German.
Yeah, for a German, exactly. they found that one study showed that a daily 20-minute gentle massage for 6 weeks in older people with dementia decreased aggressiveness and reduced the levels of stress marker in the blood. So it was people who were kind of on the edge here.
Yeah.
One study even showed that healthy young adults who caressed a robotic baby seal, don't give them ideas, felt less pain from a mild heat stimulus. So it helps you deal with the things that are unpleasant in your environment, and that makes sense. We're that kind of creature. That's what we are.
You had a few things about climate change earlier, and then this is a team of European researchers say that hundreds of thousands of meteorites, which may provide valuable information, are disappearing from Antarctica at an alarming rate. Because of the warmer temperatures, they're kind of like sinking into the ice there. So it says for every tenth of a degree of increase in global temperatures, an average of nearly 9,000 meteorites disappear from the surface of the ice sheet.
Wow.
It's weird things you never...
No, you don't think about stuff
weird
like that.
Connections. So, yeah. Okay, okay, God does have a sense of humor.
All right.
The day O.J. died, Ford issued a recall on its Ford Bronco.
Excellent. And they're very, very slowly going back to their respective places of purchase.
The headline says, Ford Bronco O.J. Simpson recalled on same day.
Oh, wow. Oh, dear.
All right, let's end on that note.
Okay, that sounds great.
Time to declare the weekend. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. It should be a nice one. It's pretty windy out there. Go fly a kite or something today.
Yeah.
But we
mean that in the actual
literal
sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, we have to get out of here. Pants, it was great to see you.
Yeah, you too, bud.
All right, it's 2:00. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison. Stick around for the kiosk, and then who cooks for you with our pal, the Real Jaguar.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, April 12th.
This is Bird Note. But before Bird Note existed, John Kessler was recording the sounds of Seattle for public radio station KPLU, now called KNKX. From the fairy whistle to the space needle elevator operator.
Welcome to the elevator.
To salmon leaping in a stream. But after 100 or so of these sounds, John was feeling stumped.
I was like, what makes sound? What makes sound? And I was like, oh, wait, birds. Birds make sound.
He connected with some local birders to find the best spots in the city.
I saw some amazing stuff that I had no idea was there, like the Great Blue Heron Rookery at the Ballard Locks. They took me to hear winter wrens at a park overlooking Puget Sound. They also sent me with a grebe expert at Green Lake. 100 feet from a 4-lane highway, there's these beautiful birds making their little nests on top of the lily pads.
Shortly after, Bird Note's founder, Chris Peterson, sought out John's musical ear to help create a sound-rich show highlighting the joy of birds. John worked as Bird Note's senior producer for over 18 years. Recently retired from the show, birds are still a part of John's life. He uses a recording device outside his home to keep track of his local feathered friends. And he's hoping to spend a little more time focusing on